Hello, and welcome to the first Liverpool Life weekly podcast of 2016. I'm Katie Hewson, and I'm going to be bringing you all the top stories this week, as well as a sports roundup and what's on in the city. Coming up, find out why Merseyside police have added a bit of colour to their uniform this month.
We are still seeing people literally killed by homophobic institutions, governments and everybody else who are holding homophobic views.
Staff at the Royal Hospital attempt to make the biggest pan of Scouse.
Well, I'm really delighted to be here today to launch Scouse at the House.
And we went out onto the streets of Liverpool to see if you thought the introduction of sugar tax is really going to do its job.
If I wanted something sugary, I'd go for that sort of thing, but I try and stay healthy anyway.
But first, shocking reports have shown that ethnic minority groups face a widening pay gap with the more qualifications they have. This comes after David Cameron's bid to fight discriminatory attitudes in the UK. JMU journalism reporter Laura Gilchrist is here to tell us more. So Laura, what exactly has this research shown?
Well, the research we're talking about has come from the Trade Union Congress, commonly known as the TUC. They've shown that black workers are being paid less than white workers, even if they have the same qualifications. And so to be a bit more precise, I have the figures here too. The analysis shows that a black worker with a degree will earn on average just over £14 an hour, whereas a white graduate will typically earn just under £18 an hour, which means there's more than a £4 difference between what a black graduate would earn compared to a white graduate.
David Cameron has recently commented about this. What's he had to say?
Yes, well, the Prime Minister has recently launched a new campaign to fight against discriminatory attitudes in UK institutions and to get more black people into university. David Cameron recently said that the underrepresentation of black people in British universities should shame our country and jolt us into action. The TUC has urgently called on the government to produce a race equality strategy with clear targets and adequate resourcing as a matter of political priority.
So what's in place so far to help tackle this problem?
Well, the Prime Minister has set up a plan so that universities meet with Business Secretary Saeed Javid to discuss plans to publish breakdowns of university application success rates in relation to gender and socioeconomic backgrounds. David Cameron has also appointed the Labour MP for Tottenham, David Lammy, who is quite a credible figure, to head a review into the causes of this inequality that ethnic minorities are facing.
Thanks for that, Laura. You might be wondering why Merseyside police are donning rainbow laces in their work boots this month. Well, this week marks the start of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans History Month, and our police force are doing their bit for the event. The annual event aims to promote equality and raise awareness, as well as trying to eradicate homophobia once and for all. There are various events across the country for people to take part in. Our reporter, Matt Crosby, spoke to the founder of the LGBT History Month, Susan Sanders.
We had always thought having an LGBT History Month would make a lot of sense. And when the Labour government began starting talking about the Single Equality Act and also the public duty, which would then require any organisation that receives public money to not only not discriminate against all the various strands, but also to educate and enable equality, we knew that it would be really constructive to do an LGBT History Month. And so I found a small bit of money from the Department of Education, and we set up a website which began to tell people about the idea. And it had a calendar on it, so people who set up an event could put their event on there. And it started in 2005, very small. We had a launch at the Tate Gallery. And on that launch, we had 13 people on the stage because I was very keen to make it clear that we were dealing with lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans people. First of all, the big four, but also of all ethnicities, of all abilities, of all religions and belief, and really make it clear that we were talking about our diverse community. I think that first year we had about 10 events around the country, which I was really chuffed at because I thought that was pretty phenomenal. But now we have hundreds. If you go on the website, you'll see events happening all around the country, which is just so exciting. And the point was that we were invisible. I mean, as LGBT people, we weren't appearing in anything. We were just wiped off the plate. We weren't there. Or if we were, the image was not a positive one. So the whole point of the month is to be very celebratory and to claim our past and claim our future and create our future and celebrate our present.
Do you feel the month helps raise awareness and makes people listen to what is such an important topic that may not get as covered as much as you'd maybe want in the media? Or
I think it does. I think it obviously enables people to focus for a month on the issues. And I think what's exciting is that we see museums and galleries and theatres doing a most wonderful event, looking at what they've already had in the museum and beginning to sort of recognise, oh, this has got an LGBT spark to it, and let's think about it and actually discover what we have already and focus on it and enable people to recognise that there have been LGBT people down the ages who have been doing weird and wonderful and amazing things without which our civilization wouldn't be what it looks like now.
Local to ourselves in Liverpool, Merseyside Police have decided to don the rainbow lace on their boots. How good is it to see such high established forces like that behind the campaign?
Well, you see, the police and the criminal justice system were one of our first supporters, and that was because of the Stephen Lawrence inquiry. And the Stephen Lawrence inquiry began to recognise the institutional racism. And after the 42 recommendations that came out of the Stephen Lawrence inquiry, the criminal justice system recognised that they needed to train all their staff around equality and diversity. And I was very privileged to be part of the team that delivered some of that work. And what I enabled them to recognise was that you can't just challenge race issues, because black people are women, old, young, disabled, able-bodied, and everything else. And they supported the very beginnings because they saw that if schools and people weren't dealing effectively in challenging the stereotypes, then we would have more homophobic crime. So they were very clear in supporting LGBT History Month.
Finally, just how refreshing is it to see the acceptance and support behind LGBT people? And what's next for the LGBT Month?
The big thing for me is it's wonderful to see the masses of numbers of events. And you know, I know that there's an amazing amount of work that people have done, paid and unpaid. And schools out, we're all unpaid. We're all volunteers. Yeah. We all do the work after a full day's work, and we've got very small core funding. So what we do is a minor miracle. What's in the future for me is to really push the whole concept of diversity. I think you'll still find when you look at pictures around that pertain to be celebrating LGBT people, it's predominantly white gay men. And I think that's one of the big things that we have to challenge. And this year our theme was religion and belief and philosophy, because we felt that it was really important to enable people to think through the issues about religion and belief and to blow some of the stereotypes. So the big thing, of course, is that while we have law in this country now, which supports non-discrimination of LGBT people across the world, that is not the case. And we are still seeing people literally killed by homophobic institutions, governments, and everybody else who are holding homophobic views. So there's still much to be done to challenge the homophobia which is out there in the rest of the world.
That was LGBT History Month founder Susan Sanders speaking to our reporter, Matt Crosby. For more information on how you can join in or support the campaign, go to www.lgbthistorymonth.org.uk or visit the JMU Journalism website. Here's how.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Well, this might not be one you've heard before. On Monday, staff at the Royal Liverpool Hospital attempted to break a world record for making the biggest pan of scouse. It's part of a fundraising attempt by charity R Liverpool, as they hope to raise thousands of pounds to go towards providing patients a service which goes beyond what the NHS can provide. James Knowles has the latest.
Hospital catering firm ISS attempted to cook up to 500 portions of the traditional dish in order to break the record. I was at the Royal Liverpool Hospital to see the record attempt, as was Liverpool Lord Mayor Tony Conception, who addressed those in attendance.
Well, I'm really delighted to be here today to launch Scouts at the House, our house, along with Roy of the Royal. This is a fantastic, really innovative way of raising money for the Royal Charity. And I'm delighted to be here today with Roy to make sure that it is a big success. So hopefully this is going to raise many, many thousands of pounds towards our charity. So thank you for inviting me today. It's a real privilege to launch this fantastic scheme. So would you all please have a bonus scout on our house? Thank you.
I also spoke to Angela McShane, who is the community fundraiser for the hospital, who told me why this record was being attempted.
Scouts at Our House was an event where we originally thought of because we wanted a community event, an event that everyone can get involved in, whether it's just family and friends, but also it can also spread out to local restaurants, bars and cafes. It's just an event where everyone can come together over a bowl of Scouts and have a fabulous time. The money that we raised today is going towards the new Royal Hospital that we're building. Our money that we're raising is for equipment that will be in the new build. So we've got a target of £10 million for new equipment, and that's state-of-the-art stuff. It's not your general stuff what we get anyway off the government. These are like specific pieces of kit. We're hoping to raise about £10,000 off this event. So the more packs we get out there and the more people get involved and organise their own Scouts at Our House event through the month of February, we'll hopefully get us £10,000 in the bank.
If you would like to help the cause, then you can get your own Scouse packs by emailing the charity at fundraising@rlbuht.nhs.uk.
Thanks, James. That was James Knowles telling us about the Royal Liverpool Hospital's attempt at the biggest pan of Scouse. Liverpool has one of the highest lung cancer rates in the country. According to statistics by Cancer Research UK, lung cancer incident rates in Liverpool is almost double the national average. 151 people per 100,000 are being diagnosed with the disease every year in the city. Roy Castle Lung Cancer Foundation are using World Cancer Day, which was on Thursday, as a platform to start a number of fundraising ideas, such as a red lipstick selfie. Hannah Carhill from the charity believes education is key to tackling the problem in Merseyside.
If we can persuade people, you know, and we can talk to people about the dangers of smoking and educate them, because 85% of lung cancer cases are through smoking.
Hannah also believes that the high cancer rate in the region may be down to the long-time smokers having their doubts about asking for help.
People that have been a smoker for several years, there's often this stigma attached to it where people think, oh, you know, I don't deserve the help because I've been a smoker, and, you know, that's definitely not the case.
For more information on help in your area, visit www.cancerresearch.org. And a Liverpool-based company has adopted the Swedish style of a working day. It's reduced the time employees will spend at work, just like a number of Swedish companies who now work for 6 hours a day instead of eight. The companies hope this will prevent illness in the workplace. Alex Gorton has more.
Agent Marketing has changed their standard working day from spending 6 hours in the office rather than eight. The Liverpool-based company was inspired following a movement among Swedish companies who have already put it into place. Businesses throughout Sweden shifted to a 6-hour workday in the belief that spending less time at the office means employees are more focused, procrastinate less, and have healthier and happier lives outside of work. The reduced work hours have also been implemented for nurses in a care home and mechanics at Toyota. At Agent Marketing, staff who usually work from 8:30 till 5:30 will now work 9 till 4 p.m. with a 1-hour compulsory lunch break. Michael Duran, communication manager from Liverpool Bid Company, says it's a great idea, however, may not work for all.
I can see the attractiveness of wanting your workforce to be mentally fresh and to be happier and healthier, you know, but I don't think necessarily that going to a 6-hour day is the only way to achieve that. I think there are other ways in which you can achieve that. So it's an interesting avenue to explore. But I don't think it's a necessarily one-fits-all approach.
That was Michael Duran speaking to our reporter, Alex Gorton. A Southport mum says she's delighted at news that Lego is to sell its first ever minifigure in a wheelchair. Vicky Cunningham's 12-year-old son Noah suffers from Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which means he needs to use a wheelchair to get about. A company spokesman for Lego has confirmed that the firm will sell its first minifigure in a wheelchair later this year. The addition follows online petitions and calls for Lego and other major toy makers to provide positive depictions of those with disabilities. Liverpool bakery company Real Good Food has recently announced their sugar sales is what's keeping them afloat. However, with the possible introduction of sugar tax in the UK, what does this mean for small businesses who rely on these profits? The introduction of sugar tax is part of Public Health England's plan to tackle sugar addiction. Their report states that the nation is eating too much sugar, which can lead to health problems and obesity. The report is also called for less marketing aimed at children in store, on TV and online. The report says achieving those levels could save the NHS £500 million a year, but admitted no single measure would be effective. We took to the streets of Liverpool to find out if sugar tax would really prevent people spending money on sugary snacks.
We try to avoid sugar anyway, and he doesn't have any, so it's something that we're conscious of. So I don't know, it doesn't really apply to us, but I think it's a good thing.
So I think it's going to be a good idea of the government to like, make it like the price higher. So it's going to affect positively on the people, so I agree with that.
Yeah, probably more so. I mean, I don't buy that much, but I think it'd be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it'd stop like a lot of comfort eating and that as well, wouldn't it? If it's more expensive.
If I wanted something sugary, I'd go for that sort of thing, but I try and stay healthy anyway.
Now that was the views of some of the people of Liverpool, and we want to know yours. So, is sugar tax a good way to make the UK healthier, or just a waste of time? Tweet us your thoughts.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Investments into a Birkenhead shipyard could create hundreds of jobs for the people of Merseyside. Carmel Laird is considering putting over £100 million into building a new dry dock capable of taking ships of considerably large proportions. The Wirral shipyard is already home to the biggest dry dock on the west coast of Britain, but even this is not big enough to handle the new generation of massive ships that could be shortly coming to the Mersey. If built, Carmel Laird's new dock would be a whopping 400 metres long and 60 metres wide. Now, I've got my copy of Liverpool Life. Have you got yours? I've got my copy on hand here, and you don't want to miss out. Hannah Rogers brings you the best pancake recipes for Shrove Tuesday next week. Very dangerous for those still continuing those New Year's diets. And Sophie Sear has put a great go-to guide for Chinese New Year in Liverpool. Don't forget to pick up your copy of Liverpool Life this week from the LGMU Redmond's Building reception or find it online at jmu-journalism.org.uk. Now that's all for news. Here's Adam Lawrence with the sport.
And now for this week's sports update. This week's results in the Premier League brought a mixed bag of receptions from the Merseyside clubs, as Liverpool were succumbed to a not-so-shocking 2-0 defeat to league leaders Leicester at the King Power Stadium on Tuesday evening. An informed Jamie Vardy scored a wonder goal amongst his brace to take the Foxes to 50 points for the season, leaving Liverpool in 8th. Everton, however, continued their fine recent form, strolling to a 3-0 win over relegation strugglers Newcastle at Goodison Park. Aaron Lennon put the Blues in front early on before local boy Ross Barkley scored two penalties in the second half, leaving them up the 11th in the table and 2 points behind the Merseyside rivals. In boxing, Guillermo Rigondeaux, one of the world's top pound-for-pound fighters, will fight in Britain for the first time when he takes on Jazza Dickens on March 12th. The Cuban will head to Liverpool's Echo Arena to box Merseyside's Dickens in a 10-round bout on the undercard of Terry Flanagan's WBO lightweight title defence against Derry Matthews. The former unified super bantamweight champion Rigondeaux was stripped of his belts after a period of inactivity but returned to the ring in November and is now in a position to face Carl Frampton or Scott Quigg following their unification fight. Dickens believes that Frampton and Quigg have seen this fight as a threat where he sees it as an opportunity, and the Liverpool man feels that the pound-for-pound king has weaknesses and he is going to exploit them for the victory. And now for some amateur sport. Liverpool Basketball Club Under-14s, also known as LBC, emerged triumphant in their derby clash thriller with rivals Sefton Stars. In one of the most thrilling games this season, LBC triumphed 90-92 despite Sefton taking an early lead and a 2-point advantage after the first quarter. Liverpool fought back midway through the second quarter and assumed the lead as some perfect shooting by the LBC saw them take a 2-point advantage at halftime. The game continued to go back and forth in the third quarter, but it was in the final 10 minutes that settled this most pulsating of ties. The host regained the lead once again, and with the seconds left on the clock, Sefton scored one final 3-point attempt to salvage the match and level the tie at 76-76 to take it to overtime. The extra 5 minutes proved too much for the exhausted visitors, with LBC racing into a 4-point lead to take the victory. In table tennis, Liverpool League Division 1 champions Wavertree Labour maintained their pursuit of back-to-back titles with a 7-3 victory over Ford. Unbeaten singles and double stints from Thomas Hadley and Dave Griffith was enough to secure the victory over the former champions, who struggled for consistency this season. Ford received a much-needed boost this week when 9-times Liverpool men's singles champion Kevin Dodler was added to the squad for the rest of the season in attempts to bring more firepower, but that wasn't enough to take the victory against the league leaders. That's all the sport for now. Make sure to tune in next week's update for all your sports news here in Liverpool.
Thanks, Adam. Now it's time for What's On in Liverpool this coming week. It's Chinese New Year on Sunday, and as always, it's going to be spectacular. Thousands of lanterns will line the streets of Chinatown to celebrate the Year of the Monkey. But as I said before, you can read Liverpool Life to find out more. St George's Hall is hosting the Alice Experience this weekend, which is the latest large-scale production of Community Group in Another Place. Guests get to meet iconic characters such as the Mad Hatter and the Queen of Hearts during a series of performances to commemorate 150 years of the much-loved novel. Adult tickets are £12 and children's tickets are £9. Liverpool also welcomes a new yoga and vegetarian cafe this week. The cafe is open on Cook Street and is the first of its kind in the city. And sharpen those stilettos and let's do the time warp. Rocky Horror Picture Show ends its run at Liverpool's Empire Theatre this weekend, but there's still time to get tickets. Starring X Factor's Diana Vickers and Ben Freeman as Janet and Brad, tickets are from £10. And Matchbox Comedy Club celebrates its first birthday on Wednesday the 10th of February at the Lantern Theatre. A number of comedy favourites such as Al Greaves and Nana Funk are on hand to ensure everyone parties with a smile. Now that's all today. I'm Kate Hewson. Join us next week for Liverpool Life's weekly podcast.
This has been the Liverpool Life podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.